For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's October the 29th. We're in Shmuel Beis. We're in Perek Zayin, chapter 7. And we are starting from Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. Chapter 7, verse 18.
You have 14?
That's what I wrote.
Yeah, you're
coming.
I have
your Yudalit. Okay, well, we'll start from there. We'll start from 14. Okay, I thought we got up to your design. We did not cover those particular. Okay, fine. Now what we left off all those weeks ago was that David wanted to build a Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem told Nasan, and he mentioned it to Nasan Hanavi, and Nasan told David, go ahead, do it. And then Hashem appeared to Nasan immediately and told him, go tell David not to do it, and do it right away, because David is not going to wait around. He's going to act immediately. You need to stop him right away. And Hashem said he does not want David to build the Beis HaMikdash, but rather David's son will build the Beis HaMikdash. And in the Nevuah that Nasan tells David, it's all about how Shlomo will take over for him and that Hashem will establish David's line forever. So in Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, we're still in the middle of what Nasan was saying to David about Shlomo, that Shlomo will build the Beis HaMikdash. And then it says, I'll just read a few psukim now, and then we'll discuss that, and then we'll go on from the next piece of this. Ani ayelo le'av, I will be for him as a father, meaning to Shlomo. V'hu yeli levein, he will be to me as a son. Asher beha'avo, so that when he strays, v'ochachtiv b'shevet anoshim, that I will admonish him with the staff of men, u'v'nig'ei b'nei adam, and with the afflictions of people. So that there will be times when he's going to stray, and when that happens, then I will use the staff of man and the afflictions of people to punish him, to admonish him. So chasi lo yosur mimenu, but my kindness will not stray from him. Kasher hasiro simeim shol, the same way that it strayed from Shaul, asher hasiro sime lefanecha, that I removed him from before you, David. And your house and your kingdom will be
established
forever. Your throne will be established forever. Like all these words, all of this vision came deeper. Nasan el David, Nasan spoke to David. And now, starting in Yuches, verse 18 is going to be David's reaction to Nasan's Nevuah. So one point to make over here, I do think we read this before, but one point to make is that when Hashem mentions that Shlomo will be admonished with the staff of man and with the afflictions of Bnei Adam, of people, so the staff of man refers to that Hashem will bring a foreign king against him if he is to stray, and afflictions of people means the way people are afflicted. And that is referring to the Shadim. Shadim are some sort of creature that exists that are, the Gemara says, in certain ways the Shadim are like people, and in certain ways the Shadim are like angels. Kind of like a middle ground kind of being that is sort of human, sort of angelic. And the Shadim are generally cause trouble, meaning they can be used to cause trouble for people. And Shlomo HaMelech will end up with a fascinating encounter with the Melech of the Shadim, with the King of the Shadim. And we will discuss that, Mitzvah Hashem, when we get to Sefer Malachim, and we discuss the construction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So the way that Shlomo was able to do it involved the Shadim, and particularly the King of the Shadim, and what happened when Shlomo HaMelech did stray, then he was punished. Hashem used the King of the Shadim to punish Shlomo. But it is an entire story in and of itself, and it is not for now. The Shadim were brought into existence, the Gemara tells us, during the 130 years that Adam HaRishon separated from Chava after eating from the Eitz HaDa'as, after eating from the tree of knowledge, which was a terrible sin, and therefore, because of that, Misa, death, was brought into the world, and because of that, Adam did not want to bring any more human beings into the world who would eventually die, so he separated from Chava for 130 years. At the end of 130 years, due to an incident involving some of Cain's descendants, Adam went back to Chava, and that's when Shace was born, and he had many children after that time. During those 130 years where he was without Chava, nevertheless, he did bring creatures into the world. Creatures were brought into the world, and those creatures were Shadim. It's unclear, at least unclear to me, how he brought creatures into the world, and it is certainly unclear to me exactly what these Shadim are. We just know that they do exist, although that in our day and age, because of the fact that we are so distant from these sorts of things, we don't really have much to do with them, and it's not of concern of ours, but it will be an interesting story and something to learn from when we get to it in Malachim. So I do not want to dwell on this topic now of Shadim, but just to be aware that that is something which we will have to cover when we get to it in Malachim. Yeah.
How can Adam create something?
I don't know. That's what I said. I don't know how.
Oh. Okay.
Pasuk Yoches, verse 18. By Avoh HaMelech David, the king. Now this is his reaction to what Nathan said. Now you imagine that David would be disappointed because he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash and he's being told he cannot, but his son will do it. However, in Nathan's presentation to David, he tells him that Hashem is going to establish David's line forever. By Avoh HaMelech David, Vayeshev Lifnei Hashem. And the king David came and he sat before Hashem. Now where is before Hashem? So the Rashi tells us this means in front of the Aron, in front of the Ark. Even though there was no Beis HaMikdash, but there was the Aron, and David sat before the Aron, Vayomer, and he said, this is a prayer. He says, Mi Anochi Hashem Elokim, who am I, Hashem? Umi Vesi, and what is my house? Ki Havi Osani Ad Halom, that you have brought me till today. What do I deserve that you have brought me till this day? Vatiktan od zos be'inecha Hashem Elokim, and even this has been small in your eyes, Hashem, meaning bringing me to this day that I am here as the king of the Jewish people. That was small for you. It was not enough. Vatdaber gamel beisav dechalame rachok, and you spoke also concerning the house of your servant in the distance, meaning my future generations. Vizos Torah Sa'adam Hashem Elokim. This is the law of man, Hashem Elokim. This phrase, Vizos Torah Sa'adam, this is the law of man, there is a debate how to read it. We're going to come back to this phrase to talk about how to read this phrase. Uma Yosif David Oda Daber Elecha. What else could David speak to you? You know your servant, which means you've done so much for your servant, Hashem Elokim. You've taken care of all my needs. You've set up my family, my household as the king's forever. You've established my line forever. What more could I possibly ask for? You've done so much for me. So David is full of gratitude. Even though his request was denied, he is full of gratitude in hearing the news that his line is established forever. Bavur Dvarcha Uchalibcha Asisa Eskla Gedula Hazos. It is because of your word and your desire that you have done all of this. It's not due to me or anything I did. It's not my credit. I didn't do anything to deserve this. But it's because of your word that you spoke to Shmuel, and you told him you were going to make me the king. And because this is what you wanted, this is why you've done it. But it's not something I deserve. Lehodia Tavdecha, to make your servant known, to make known to your servant. Al Kain, because of all this, Gadalta Hashem Elokim. Hashem, you are exalted. Ki ein kamocha, there's no one like you, nothing like you. Ve'ein Elohim zulasecha, there is no power other than you. Kechol asher shamanu be'ozneinu, like all we have heard in with our ears. Umi chamcha ki Yisrael, and who is like your nation, like Yisrael? Goy echad ba'aretz, one nation in the land. Asher hoku Elohim liftos lo le'am, that great messengers, great agents have gone to redeem them as a nation. The great agents he's talking about are Moshe and Aaron. That they have gone, they went to redeem the Jewish people as a nation for Hashem. For lasum lo shame, and to give them fame. For lasos lachem hagedula v'noraos le'artzecha, and to do for you, meaning for the Jewish people, all this greatness and wonders in your land. Mipnei amcha asher padisa lecha mimitzrayim, that you have chased away the other nations before your nation that you redeemed from Egypt. Goyim ve'elohav, all nations and their gods, you chased them away from the land for the Jewish people. David has characteristically shifted the whole focus of this prayer or this thanksgiving to Hashem, where it was about David and his family, David and his future, and how he's so thankful to Hashem, and he says how exalted Hashem is. Now all of a sudden he shifted it to talk about how exalted the Jewish people are, that the Jewish people are one nation, that the special nation that Hashem sent Moshe and Aaron to take out of Egypt and to establish and to do great wonders for and to chase away the nations that were in Israel before the Jewish people.
Pasuk Chaskimel, when it starts, is that the same lashon Moshe uses in Hazina when he addresses the people before he dies? Niyam Chayak Yisrael.
Yeah, it's not Hazina. It's it's earlier in Sefer Dvarim. Okay. Yes, in Pashas Vayis Hanan. Okay. Yeah. Pasuk Chav Dalet, verse 24. Vatechonein lecha es amcha Yisrael lecha la'am ad olam, and you have established your nation Yisrael for you as a nation forever. Vatash Hashem ha'yisa lahem le'lokim, and you Hashem was for them as a God. So you've established the Jewish people as your nation forever. Ve'ata Hashem elokim, and now Hashem elokim hadavar asher dibarta al avdecha ve'al beiso, the word that you spoke about your nation and about his household, hakim ad olam, established forever. Ve'aseik asher dibarta, and do as you said. Now David is praying that what Hashem said should come true. V'yigdal shimcha ad olam le'mor, and your name should be exalted forever, saying, Hashem tzvakos Elokim al Yisrael, Hashem of hosts is the God over the Jewish people. Uveis avdecha David yenachon lefanecha, and the house of David your servant should be established forever. Ki ata Hashem tzvakos Elokim Yisrael, for you Hashem, the God of Yisrael, galisa es ozen avdecha le'mor, you have revealed the ear of your servant, saying, Bayis evne lach, a house I will build for you. Al kain matza avdecha es libo, therefore your servant has found in his heart li spaleli lecha, to daven to you, to pray to you, es atfila hazos, this prayer. V'ata Hashem Elokim, and now Hashem God, atohu ho Elokim, you are God, udvarecha you emes, your words should be truth, v'atidaber al avdecha, and you have spoken to your servant es atova hazos, all of this goodness. V'ata, and now, Ho'el uvareches beis avdecha, begin and bless the house of your servant Lios la'olam lefanecha, to be forever before you. Ki ata Hashem Elokim, for you Hashem, dibarti, you have spoken. Umi birchascha yivorech beis avdecha la'olam, and from your blessing, the house of your servant should be blessed forever. It sounds a little bit redundant because we're not dissecting every single word to figure out what each word is adding, but we get the gist of what David is doing over here in his prayer. there are several things that he is mentioning in this prayer. He is obviously thanking Hashem for having established his line forever. He is praising Hashem for all his greatness. He is praising the Jewish people and thanking Hashem for having established the Jewish people as his nation forever. And he is also asking that the word of Hashem come true. Now, this last point, asking that the word of Hashem come true, we may have thought shouldn't be necessary. If Hashem says it, it's obviously going to come true. Why does he need to daven that it come true? If Hashem said it's going to happen, isn't it obvious that it's going to happen? So that's something which we need to address. Before doing so, however, I want to go back to that line that I told you back in Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19, where David says to Hashem that just making me king wasn't good enough. You also established my house, and that even that wasn't good enough. You even told your servant about this for the distance. And this is the law of man. V'zos taras ha'adam. Hashem Elohim. There are two ways to read this. One way to read it is that he's saying it as a rhetorical question. Is this the way of man? Is man told that they're guaranteed that their family will be in a particular position forever? Who gets such wonderful kindness from Hashem to be informed that their line will be established forever? That's not a typical thing. So it's part of his way of expressing his gratitude to Hashem. You've done for me something which no one gets. Is this the way of man? The other way to read it is, this is the way of man. Which man was shown his future for all generations? Abraham was not shown his future for all generations. Well, he was shown that he will have, his children will be like the stars. But who was given details about his future generations?
Yaakov and Moshe, because he didn't live to see it, though.
Yeah, Moshe saw the Eretz Yisrael, that's true. But his own personal future generations. Adam HaRishon was shown dor. And he's shown all the generations until the end of time. Adam HaRishon was shown everything. And just as Adam was shown all the future generations, so is David shown all of his future generations. And therefore David says, this is the law of Adam. Would you're treating me the same way that you treated Adam. Just as Adam was shown all of his generations, so too you have now shown me my future generations.
Rabbi, yeah. Adam, I mean, one of the reasons it's given that he was shown that is because then he gave 70 years over to David HaMelech.
That's where we're going. Very good.
But David HaMelech, when he's shown it, what's the purpose there?
Okay. So, Adam wasn't shown it in order that he give away his years to David, but it is true that he did give away his years to David. When Adam was shown the future generations, he was shown David, and that David, the Medrash says, was supposed to die at birth. Yes. And Adam gave 70 years of his life to Adam. Adam lived to be 900, to David. Adam was lived to be 930 years old, and he was supposed to live to be 1,000 years old, and he gave 70 years to David. David lives for 70 years. There is a medrash along those lines. Now, David is being treated the same as Adam in this context, in this way of reading it. Now, the first question then is, what's the purpose in showing Adam all of the future generations? If it was simply for him to bequeath some years to David, however that's possible to do, then just show him David. Why is he shown all of the future generations? What's the purpose in that? Now, Adam was starting a new race. Not just a new race, but a new creature. He's the beginning of man. And Hashem shows him all the future generations. We aren't given that privilege. None of us are given the privilege of seeing all the future generations. we know that mankind as a whole, and the Jewish people specifically, perpetuate until the end of time. But we're not given specific details about that. Adam was given specific details about that, all the way into the future. That's a great kindness. What's the purpose in doing that? So when a person is starting something off, is beginning something, so you hope that it will be successful. You start a business. You hope it will be successful. It might not, but you certainly hope it will be. And you put effort into it, hoping that it will be successful. If you don't know whether it will or won't be successful, then there may be some hesitancy about how much effort to put in. I'm going to put in effort, but I'm not going to put in every last ounce of strength that I have. What if it doesn't succeed, and then I need my strength for something else? So that I may put a great deal of effort into it, but I have to have a lot of confidence that this is going to succeed for me to pour every single bit of strength and resource that I have into it. A person who starts a business, they may be very confident that it's going to succeed, but if they have any degree of, unless they have a really, really, really high risk tolerance, they're going to hold back a little bit of money that they're not going to pour into the business, because what if the business fails? I got to be able to feed my family if the business fails until I can find something else to do. So a person's going to hold back a little bit. A person's going to have something they think they can fall back on just in case. But when a person knows for a fact that if I put in the effort, then this business will 100% succeed, a Navi comes and tells you, if you put every last bit of effort into this business, it will succeed, well then you'll put every last bit of effort into the business. The person who is starting off the human race, Adam, was shown all the future generations so he could pour everything he had into establishing the human race. And there would be no holding back. In that context, he is shown David HaMelech. Now, David is given the same gift as Adam. David is establishing a line within the human race. But as we've talked about before, David's line is the most important line in the human race. There is no more important line in all of humanity than that of David HaMelech. David's descendants will eventually produce Mashiach, and it is through Mashiach that Hashem will be known throughout the world, which is the whole purpose of the very existence of everything. The whole reason why Hashem created everything, not just the universe, even the angels. The whole reason why Hashem embarked on the whole process of Bereshis, of creation, is so that ultimately man will come to know Hashem. And that is done through David HaMelech. It's through the Jewish people as a whole, but specifically through the line of David HaMelech. Without the line of David HaMelech, the whole very purpose of creation ceases to matter. There's no purpose anymore. Therefore, it is the most significant line. It's more important than the Kohanim. It's more important than anything. It is David HaMelech's line. David, therefore, when he is now establishing this new line, Hashem tells David, it's going to exist forever. This is not a suffix. It's not a doubt. It's going to go on forever. It's a huge gift to know that it's going to work. Therefore, David knows he should pour every ounce of strength and resource he has into establishing the Malchus, the royalty of the line of David HaMelech. When Adam, let me make one other point before I say what I was going to say just now. We've talked about before that Adam the word Adam, spelled Aleph, Dalid, Mem, is also Rashi Tevos. It's also the acronym for Aleph stands for Adam, Dalid stands for David, and Mem stands for Mashiach. Because that is, again, the most significant line Adam has is David that produces Mashiach. When Adam is shown his future, so should David not have the chance to establish his line, then the very purpose of existence is threatened. It doesn't have a reason to be there. So Adam is essentially given the opportunity to give up from his own life in order to perpetuate the world, in order for the world to have a reason to exist. You see, Adam, when he's shown the future, he is given the opportunity to make the decision. Do I want to give up? Do I want to do I want to have self-sacrifice so that the reason, the whole purpose of creation is met or not? And Adam is willing to give up his own life, at least several years of his own life, in order that there be the line that will ultimately lead to the whole purpose of the world's existence. Adam, therefore, got not only the gift of knowing that his line, which is all of the human race, would be perpetuated, he was also given the opportunity to directly influence all of his future generations, which means that all the future generations now are influenced by the fact that there was a David HaMelech who lived for 70 years, which is in turn only because of Adam HaRishon. Whether the Medrash is literal or not, I assume it is literal, but what the Medrash is saying is that Adam did pour all of his resources into establishing the human race, that it should serve its purpose. So much so that he even gave up years of his life for it, so that David would exist. David only exists through Adam's self-sacrifice. David is shown his future so that he also can pour all of his resources into the establishment of his line, that it should bring about the purpose of creation. Remember, just having David's line is not enough. It's that David's line should lead the Jewish people, who will in turn lead everybody else to come to the realization of Hashem's sovereignty. All of this is what he means over here. This is the law of man. David recognizes that he is being given the same charge that Adam was given. Now, once David knows this, and he's given this incredible charge, so now it's his awesome responsibility to make it happen. So he now has to raise his family in a way that not only means that the next king will be worthy of this mission, but so will the king after that, and so will the king after that, and so will the king after that. David needs to establish it now. You know, of course, that when you are trying to project long into the future, or over a great distance, you know that when you're trying to draw a straight line, if it's a short straight line, well, even if it's off by a little bit, you won't notice it. But if it's a very, very long line, then if it's off even by a little bit, well, over a great distance, that little bit will become a great deal off the mark. The further you go, the much more precision is needed. When David is told that your line is forever, forever is the longest you can go. So there's no greater precision that you would need than this. You need incredible precision over here. As much as is humanly possible, human beings are by definition imprecise. We can't be that precise because we're human, but we can put in the effort to be as precise as possible. And David is given that charge to establish his line with as much precision as possible. This is significant to be aware of when we get to what ultimately happens within David's own family and the trials and tribulations that he's going to have in having a successor that does meet these standards. We'll see how hard it is for him to do it. The amount of effort that David is putting in, and the just how hurtful it was to David to have such a difficult time in doing this, because he's devoting his life to this precision. That's what he's going to be doing now. He's giving this challenge, and he's devoting his life to the precision of the line of David, which starts, of course, with his own children, but then has to be strong enough that it will go on all the way until Mashiach comes. Now, David, as we pointed out, after thanking Hashem, praising Hashem, then he segues into the Jewish people. And he makes it not about himself exclusively or his family, but about the Jewish people as a whole. And he emphasizes the greatness of the Jewish people, how Hashem sent Moshe and Aaron to take the Jews out of Egypt, and Hashem cleared away Eretz Yisrael for the Jewish people and established the Jewish people forever. So David, this is part of David's humility coming forth, that David recognizes that he is within the context of the Jewish people. This is not a one family show. He may be the lead family, but there's a whole bunch of supporting cast which is also involved, and it doesn't work by yourself. So he understands he's within the context of the Jewish people. The words that he chooses to use in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23, Umichamcha ki Yisrael goyachad ba'aretz, who is like your nation, like the Jews, one nation in the world. So this is very similar to one of the psukim in the Torah, but the Gemara in Maseches Brachos says that just as there is a mitzvah in the Torah to put on tefillin, so too Hashem wears tefillin. Obviously, that in and of itself can't be understood by a human being in any literal sense, because Hashem has no body. So if he has no body, how does he wear anything? That doesn't make any sense. Hashem has no arm to put tefillin on. He has no head to put tefillin on. So that doesn't make sense. But whatever it means, somehow that which we are doing when we put on tefillin, Hashem does something similar to that. Now, when we put on tefillin, what is happening is we are taking, the main part of the tefillin is not visible to the human eye. The main part of the tefillin is the parchment with the words of the various parashos, the various paragraphs that mention tefillin, that are inside the boxes. That's the most significant part of the tefillin. And in our tefillin, we have four parashos, four paragraphs. We have Shema. We have Vahayim Shamoa, the first two paragraphs of the Shema, that's two of them. And the other two are two paragraphs at the end of Parashas Bo that mention the mitzvah of tefillin. And that's Kadesh Li Kol Bukhar and Vahayaki Yaviyacha. Those are four paragraphs that we have in our tefillin. Both they're in the head tefillin and in the arm tefillin, four paragraphs. What's that?
And the which parsha was that?
Then the precious bow is the last two. They all mention that Hashem took us out of Egypt and that He commanded us to wear the tefillin. They all speak of our commitment to Hashem. And the Mefarshim say that the putting the tefillin on the arm and on the head is that, like the Pasuk says in the third paragraph of the Shema, where it says, "Velo sasuru acharei levavchem v'acharei inechem," do not stray after your heart and after your eyes. the one tefillin on the arm corresponds to the heart, and the one on the head corresponds to the eyes, and that we bind ourselves and commit ourselves to Hashem. So the tefillin represents our commitment to Hashem. So Hashem, so to speak, putting on tefillin means that Hashem is committing Himself to the Jewish people,
right,
which is an amazing thing to say. The Gemara then says, what does it say in Hashem's tefillin? So the Gemara lists various psukim, various verses in the Torah that all speak about the greatness of the Jewish people. One of them is, Mi ka'amcha Yisrael, who is like your nation Yisrael, goyachad ba'aretz, a singular nation in the land. All of the parashios that Hashem has in His tefillin, whatever that means, speak of the greatness of the Jewish people. We speak of our binding ourselves to Hashem and to His commandments, and Hashem speaks of His commitment to us. Hashem has done an unbelievable thing with us that we take for granted, but the truth is that it's one of the, if not the greatest thing He's ever done for us, and that is that He has linked Himself to us. I want to use a very mundane example over here, and I run the risk of, depending who listens to this, I run the risk of getting into trouble for saying this, but it's a true example, even if a listener may not like this. And that is that, you know, I guess I'll leave out names and everybody can just figure things out on their own. You know that institutions all need money. Institutions can't survive without money. And therefore, philanthropists are always sought to support institutions. An institution is constantly needs to support itself. If an institution can somehow link itself with a particular philanthropist, assuming that philanthropist stays wealthy, the institution can never die because the philanthropist can't allow it. See, when a philanthropist allows his or her name to be attached to an institution, then it would be terribly demeaning to that philanthropist for the institution to stop existing. So it almost locks the philanthropist in to that particular institution. That's why philanthropists have to be very careful before allowing his or her name to be attached to or part of a particular institution. It's a commitment. It's a two-way commitment because it means that now it's true the philanthropist may now have say in what happens in that institution because they're supporting it, but at the same time, the philanthropist has an incredible vested interest in the institution perpetuating itself, and it's considered to be a feather in an organization's cap if they can somehow link themselves in that way. So again, lahavdil, that's a mundane example, but Hashem has linked His name to us. God forbid, if we don't do what we're supposed to do, Hashem may, God forbid, punish. He may do whatever He has to do to get us to get on the straight and narrow, but He can't destroy us. What do you mean? How can He? What do you mean? He can't. He can do whatever He wants. But destroying us is almost kivyachol, so to speak, like destroying Himself. Of course, He can't destroy Himself, but it's destroying His presence in this world because we are His presence in this world. He's linked His name with our name. He has made it that as the Jews go, so goes Hashem's reputation, Hashem's, the knowledge of Hashem in this world. He's put the two together. And that's represented by the tefillin, that we bind ourselves to Hashem, and Hashem binds Himself to us or speaks of us. The David HaMelech here in acknowledging what Hashem has done for him, Hashem has said, your line is forever. That's a pretty serious commitment on Hashem's part. What if David's line doesn't behave properly? But Hashem said it's forever. That means that somehow Hashem has to take a very active role in making sure that David's line does succeed. Because if David's lines fail, what's going to be? He can't choose another line. He said it's going to be this line. He can't choose another nation. He said it's going to be us. So there's a vested interest in Hashem making sure the Jewish people are successful in his mission. That David HaMelech and his line is successful in Hashem's mission. And David invokes that in his thanksgiving to Hashem over here in establishing him and within the context of establishing the Jewish people. Good question. Yeah.
So I understand, like, when Moshe was on the quest and he said that he saw the back of Hashem.
Whatever it means.
Okay. But when you say here that this is a sign he's binding, it's only binding the half, because only half of the Jewish people wear tefillin. Why wouldn't Hashem give a sign that would encompass all the Jewish people then? That's bothersome, Rabbi.
Well, it's only bothersome if you look at men and women as two different groups within the Jewish people. In other words, if you look at the various genders, if you look at the two genders as being two disparate groups that have nothing to do with each other, then yeah, that would be true.
I didn't say they didn't have anything to do with each other, but there are differences.
But the way Hashem set it up is that the two genders complement each other, and that the men complement the women complement the men, each mission complements each other. And so it's not that the mitzvos that men are commanded to do, even if a woman doesn't do them, it's not that a woman has no relationship to those mitzvos, it's that the way that she relates to those mitzvos is by complementing men.
Tefillin
is really no different than all of the other mitzvos that women are not required to do, like sukkah and like lulav and like shofar, those mitzvos that are time bound mitzvos, women are not required to do. Therefore, even if a woman does those mitzvos, which unlike tefillin, she's allowed to do those other mitzvos, but the reward she will get is not as great as a man. Because when one is commanded, one gets more reward. And therefore, if a woman would be given a choice, which is, should she do the mitzvah of sukkah, or should she get a man to do the mitzvah of sukkah, her reward in the world to come will be greater for getting a man to do the mitzvah of sukkah than for doing the mitzvah of sukkah herself. Because the man's performance of the mitzvah is a greater fulfillment of God's will. Therefore, her getting the man to do it is just as great a fulfillment of God's will as the man doing it. And it is in that manner that she attaches herself to that mitzvah. Now, she could do the mitzvah of sukkah herself, but it will not be as profound as getting a man to do it.
But and that still doesn't answer why, instead of picking something for the woman or something for the man, why God
it is not
something
different.
That all...
No, it's not different, because when a woman enables or encourages or gets a man to do tefillin, then she's doing tefillin. That is the same thing as a man doing tefillin. The way that she does it is through getting a man to do it. In our culture in America, it's a very difficult thing to accept, because we don't believe in that in American culture.
I don't have any problem understanding that and believing that, but why did God pick something that one part of the Jewish people is obligated in and the others are not?
I'm trying to say that all parts of the Jewish people are obligated in it. Everybody is obligated to make sure the men wear tefillin. You see what I'm saying? The entire Torah is everybody.
That's like saying everyone's obligated to try to have a Navi who would be greater than Moshe, because then Hashem's going to have to bring Mashiach before that person gets to that level, because he said there would be nobody greater than Moshe.
No.
I mean, that's what your argument sounds like to me. It sounds kind of backwards. It's like, this is what it is, so I'll move backwards to try to explain it.
The Gemara
says, instead of why does it work... Why couldn't it work the other way?
The Gemara says the greatest reward a person could get is for the study of Torah. That there is no greater reward than that. The Gemara asks, but then how does the woman get the reward? The Gemara says it can't be through study of Torah because she's not commanded to. And if you're not commanded to, then it can't be as good a reward as a man doing it. So
right.
Then how does a woman get the great reward of the study of Torah? And the Gemara answers by getting men to study the Torah.
But why
and there are many
be
ways
something
of getting
like Shabbat that everybody has obligated to do? That's what I'm asking. That's why have it be that it's something that men are obligated and that women get credit for helping men get there instead of something that we're all obligated to do?
Perhaps.
Why not that way?
I don't know the answer.
Can I just give a little interjection?
Go ahead. We have to go to the last piece.
Gabriel Pinkus' book that he dedicated to his wife, there's a chapter that he totally writes why women are not obligated.
I don't care about obligation or not. That's not my question.
My question is, why didn't God,
instead of wearing the tefillin, which only men are obligated, say, I wear Shabbos?
Her question is that there are mitzvot that everybody has to do. So then why pick one that men do and women support? Why not pick one that everybody
right.
does?
I'd be just as unhappy if he had picked one like lighting the Shabbos candles that women typically do. Instead of the guy, like, it doesn't matter to me either way. It would be bothersome. Why not pick something that all Jews are commanded to keep?
Okay.
Rabbi, why is tefillin the main one, the greatest, compared to Shabbos and everything else?
Yeah, Mrs. Lewis is really asking the same question, just in a different way.
But it's
not the greatest. I mean, Shabbos is also a great mitzvah. I don't know if it's the greatest.
Right. Oh, but you said in the Gemara, it says that...
No, learning Torah, studying Torah.
Oh, and also, which paragraphs are in which box? How are they separated?
All four are in both boxes. It's just that in the hand tefillin, in the arm tefillin, it's one box with one compartment, just one hollow compartment. In there are all four paragraphs on one parchment. In the head tefillin, it's one outer box, but it's actually four compartments together. It's four separate compartments.
Uh-huh.
And then there are four parchments that are put into the...
Are they actually linked together, or are they separately, one from another? Are they attached?
In the hand phone, it's one...
One whole one.
One whole
but
one.
But the others are separately put
There's actually a machlokas how to do it. But yeah, but anyway, they're in there.
I want to ask too, there must be a lot of discussion on 70. Why 70? Is it related like 8? Is beyond 7? Is special in Judaism?
Who mentioned 70?
70 years.
Was given
oh, David, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's 70, I mean, it's the 70 nations, and the 70 souls. I mean, the number 70 seems to be the Sanhedrin. Yeah.
Isn't there something that if you live 70 years, you've lived a good long life and above
well,
that?
Well, the Pasuk says that that's like a normal life, considered to be quote-unquote normal. Like 70 is like the benchmark.
And this far we don't say that one paragraph in Hallel, when you say about Hashem, you know, not to leave us, show the nations who we are. I got that right. And it's also on Wednesdays, the psalm you say for Wednesday. It sounds like it's so related to what you said, that God cannot let us down, and we ask on Wednesday, right? Am I right?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But I just want to finish this up before we run out of time. So, but at the end of the whole thing, after all of this, David says that he then davens that Hashem's word should come true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we mentioned, that's a little bit of a conundrum, because what do you mean? If Hashem said it, isn't it for sure going to come true? So the thing is that the Gemara asks the question with Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov was told that Hashem says he's going to take him to the house of Lavan and bring him back and everything's going to be good. But then Yaakov davens to Hashem that he should be cared for and that he should come back in peace and all that. So the Gemara says, but why does he have to daven if Hashem told him it's going to be okay? So the Gemara says, Shema Yigrom HaChet, because perhaps sin will undermine everything. You see, there are different types of things Hashem can say. Hashem can say something that is going to be no matter what, and then Hashem can say something that is contingent on good behavior. We're not necessarily told whether a particular statement of Hashem is no matter what, or whether it's contingent on good behavior. Now it happens to be that he's Hashem linking himself to the Jewish people is no matter what. But David wants to make sure that it's going to come true about him and his descendants, not knowing for certain that it's no matter what. Perhaps it'll be, it's contingent on sin. So David is praying, make it come true, make sure I deserve it, make sure that I don't stray, take the active role in making sure that things work out properly. So that he's davening for it to go for it to come true. And even if it's going to happen no matter what, there's always a better way and a worse way. There's no question, even though Hashem has linked himself to us, and he will never forsake us, but if we do what he wants, then we have a much more pleasant experience in being that special nation of his. If we, God forbid, don't do what he wants, he's not going to destroy us, but it's not a very pleasant experience. And so, of course, we want it done in the best possible way. We don't want a kind of, round the bend way of making it happen. Yeah.
So here he's saying, please help me so I don't sin so I can keep this. And on the other hand, later on, he says, test me, Hashem.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. Okay, that's going to be, that's a tough one. Okay. Okay. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.